Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. I'm pleased to be back with you again, and there's never a time when I haven't got quite a pile of different articles and messages to read. Because of circumstances, I actually have 2 weeks of Sheldon Nidal's messages, which I will, as usual, start the programme with. But to save a little time there, because I normally read them out fully, what I've done is edited the messages so as to get to really the crux of it. But as you know, you can read the whole message, and it's full of important items. So I'll start with the one that came through via Sheldon on behalf of the Spiritual Hierarchy and Galactic Federation on the December the 26th, which was, of course, Boxing Day. And the message reads that the process to bring you promised prosperity progresses well. Our Earth allies are fully engaged in procedures that must be completed according to guidelines set forth in special documents. These papers guarantee that once these tasks are completed, your freedom is duly assured. The message goes on to say that our own operations concerning first contact are likewise going forward as planned. It is necessary to garner the support of your major governments in order to ensure that all goes smoothly. Our arrival is to be massive and of global proportions. We wish to have assurances that any possible governmental or military difficulties have been quite resolved. This requirement can avoid unnecessary embarrassment and provides the means for spreading our message as quickly and directly as possible. I would like to comment there that I feel their remarks referring to the government and saying that they wish assurances that any military difficulties have been resolved must, to my mind, relate to their activities in various countries, for example, like the Iraq War. And it is true to say that many times the Galactic Federation has said that first contact, that is the mass contact, can only be done after peace has been established throughout the world. So I'm sure that is the interpretation there. The message says, we look upon the efforts of our Earth allies as part of a means to free you from the fears and wants of limited consciousness. All societies pass through a transitional phase that can actually be quite perilous. Our duty is to move you safely through this period and allow the playing out of whatever lessons need to be imparted. This is what we are currently doing, and it has necessitated our permitting various things to occur that we would rather have kept from you. Yet you needed these particular events to be registered on your consciousness for future reference. You are nearly at a point where many massive revelations concerning your most deeply held perceptions are to be proclaimed. These declarations are to end the many lies and innuendos that have long held you in check. The raising of consciousness is a difficult task for the unwary. It requires moving beyond many beliefs held with deep conviction and supposedly historically based. This can be painful and often leads to conflict. To minimize these pitfalls, we have enlisted your ascended masters to be mediators in possible conflict situations. Their mission is to smooth over these rough patches and permit your population to grow toward the truth which has been hidden for long and twisted by your former overlords, the Anunnaki. We expect this situation to flower once the proclamations concerning your true history are made after first formal contact begins. The message goes on to say that first contact is an ongoing operation that is approaching its point of completion. Throughout this time, we have continuously learned about you and your reality. As the moment for our meeting draws near, we want you to know how much we appreciate what you are going through. Those who study you at close quarters by living among you are especially impressed. Just think of what you daily have to tolerate in order to simply live on your world. The variety of obstacles and challenges that you encounter are a true test of your resourcefulness and your ability to adapt creatively to stumbling blocks. This struggle forward to full consciousness does not have much longer to go. The time for celebrating the transformation of your reality will be a time of rejoicing for all of us. And that is the end of the message for December the 26th, according to the extracts I have made. Now, the message this week starts with, "We return at this auspicious time with more to discuss with you. Each day, our allies draw closer to their goal, and the last few remaining obstacles are now being overcome. Our fleet personnel daily watch the growth of the panic that grips the Dark's cohorts. They fully realize the implications of their approaching defeat and have hugely increased the number of last-ditch obstructions. But they know full well that these can only slightly delay the inevitable. Your future is to be a brilliant one, and it is unstoppable. The goal of this struggle is to wind up as well as to transform your present reality. This goes far beyond fiscal and economic aspects. It involves your graduation into freedom and personal sovereignty." Later, the message reads, when talking about the abundance programs and the new international financial and banking system, that this system now has full legitimacy conferred by the major international legal organizations of your world. World debt annulment is to apply to over 168 nations and to each individual. The tyranny of the Dark's fractional banking system is to be terminated, and the outrageous profits appropriated by these banks redistributed among its multitude of victims. And this is just the beginning. Corporations currently operating as special partnerships, lacking the quality of fictionalized individuals, are to be rechartered, and common law is once again the predominant rule of the land. Now, in that last statement, there is some amazing promises to us where world debt annulment is concerned, and the redistribution of the wealth of this world, I'm told, is sufficient for everyone to have, at the very least, the necessities of life, and that relates to food, to shelter, water, and energy. So that's a fantastic promise there. The message goes on to say, "This makeover of your reality ends the supreme authority usurped by your secret rulers. Their forced abdication brings all of you into a position of immense responsibility. You are now to be wealthy and debt-free, but you will still need to change the way you look at money and, above all, how you view yourself. The end of the rule of the secret elite brings much into question. For example, how you regard and care for one another. A true ecumenical blueprint needs to be put into effect worldwide. People and nations need to learn to respect each other and share the resources of this world. This test among many is why first contact is to be slightly delayed. Heaven wants to see how you treat one another and how you use your innate talents to solve your numerous collective problems. Heaven also wishes to see how you initially react to our formally announced existence. First contact requires that you openly express your sincere desire for us to come to Earth." Now, we'll comment there on a few words used at the beginning of that part, where they refer to the forced abduction of our secret rulers. And I don't think that necessarily means that the Galactic Federation are actually going to intervene and force these rulers to resign. I think it's possibly coming about through a set of circumstances where the legal procedure is used by the Galactic Federation allies upon Earth. And if we think about it, the Dark Cabal possibly has many crimes and crimes against humanity that will very easily force them to resign from their position. So I think this is how it will come about. The message goes on to say that regardless of how these tests pan out, first contact remains a high priority on Heaven's agenda. A little further on in the message, it says that our arrival, along with the re-emergence of your sister society of Inner Earth, is the means for completing this most challenging of journeys. Our point is this. We have long intended to celebrate this denouement with you, and so we welcome what is now happening on your world. The ending of this long, dark episode cannot come too soon. Our fleet remains poised to intervene and begin your glorious new day. The new reality which lies on the other side of your current dilemmas is a golden one. It is time when you come together again to form a collective oneness founded on mutual freedom and personal sovereignty. And that is where I will end the second message that came through this week. So full of promise and so very informative, as they usually are. I was personally hoping that they might talk a little bit more about how they viewed 2007, as it seems at the start of the year, many people, including my own contacts, have given their views as to how they see it. Now, I'm going on to my general news items, and again, because I haven't spoken with you for a couple of weeks, I obviously have a few more than usual, so I will start reading these straight away. And I have a feeling the first one I have here might be one that cropped up before, because the information goes back about a month, but it's perhaps worth repeating in case you missed it. And this was a report that came through Reuters in Helsinki, that the richest 2% of adults have more than half of the world's wealth and financial assets. And that was according to a study by the UN Development Research Institute. And it reads that while global income is distributed unequally, the spread of wealth is even more skewed with, and this is according to the World Institute for Development Economics Research. Yes. They said wealth is heavily concentrated in North America, Europe, and high-income Asia-Pacific countries. And in these, they collectively hold almost 90% of total world wealth. That's amazing, isn't it? 2% of adults have more than half of the world's wealth. And in light of the report that I've just read, from the Galactic Federation through Sheldon Neidel, you can see that there is an urgent need to get on with that and put this abundance program into effect. I have an article here, and most of them come to me via the internet or email where people pass them on, and it comes from a site called newstarget.com. And they were mentioning that Hawaii and the San Diego Museum of Man recently examined the traditional plant-based system of medicine, which is called ethnobotany, and that was in northern Peru. They went there to gather information on ancient herbal remedies and healing rituals in a study published in the online November edition of the Journal of Ethnobiology and Ethnomedicine. And the researchers, Raina Busman and Douglas Schoen, travelled to northern Peru to interview local healers known as curanderos and observe native healing practices. And Busman and Schoen, who are both fluent in Spanish, also collected ethnobotanical information from plant sellers by purchasing native plants in local markets and by accompanying curanderos on harvesting trips and to healing ceremonies. They were able to collect 510 plant species, which are used by the Northern Peruvian healers, as well as identify their traditional uses, vernacular names and various applications. So there you are, they're sort of what you might call one of the good news items. I can only hope that all the information they collect about the use of natural herbs and plants, etc., can be put to good use in the West, because we're very much, I think, controlled by the drug industry. In France, a bit more good news here. This came by Emma Charlton. I'm looking quickly here to see if I can see if she's attached to some paper or whatever. And I can't see any indication for the moment, but the report came from Paris through AFP, and the French government apparently had announced plans to create a legal system in response to a snowballing campaign that has seen a tent city set up for the homeless in the heart of Paris. And Prime Minister Dominique de Villepin told a press conference a bill would be presented to the cabinet this month on January the 17th and hopefully adopted before the parliament breaks up ahead of April's presidential election. The law, if passed, would make France the second European country to guarantee the right to housing, and that is after Scotland, which adopted similar measures with its 2003 Homeless Act. President Jacques Chirac used his New Year's address to promise swift government action on a right to housing, a key demand of protesters who have mounted a headline-grabbing campaign in support of France's homeless. By 2012, the government wants the right to housing to be legally enforceable and a guarantee provided by the state, or in some cases, regional or local authorities. Yeah, that's a good one, isn't it? A move in the right direction. And I think with the consciousness of the planet expanding, and probably many individuals way ahead of others, you can feel this change of direction, and it's coming out in these ways, which is wonderful. I think you could say we are already laying down the type of changes that people in the higher realms, such as the Galactic Federation, want to see, so that we can prove, I suppose, to them that we are taking the right direction. In Michael World's Wide newsletter, which I subscribe to, it's an excellent one, he had an extract of an article about Judge Cliff Barnes. Unfortunately, I can't state where this originated from, apart from it coming through Michael's Worldwide newsletter. But apparently, Judge Cliff Barnes is said to have reached the breaking point of what he saw as judicial corruption and decided to take the bull by the horns and report the judicial corruption. As a result, he has become the target of the very corrupt judicial system he is seeking to hold accountable. In particular, on July the 10th, 2006, Judge Barnes filed a writ of mandate in the Appeals Court of Florida to compel various named judges to comply with established law governing their conduct, and with the Constitution they have sworn to uphold. We are told in an original article from the Fort Pierce, Florida Tribune, and that came up on July the 12th last year, that County Judge Cliff Barnes claims his fellow judges, the state attorney and the public defender, are breaking the law at first appearance hearings and wants an appeals court to intervene. And he says that as a result of his pursuit of justice, he is now being pursued by the Florida Judicial Qualifications Commission, which appears more interested in weeding out principal judges than on judicial discipline of wayward judges. And apparently a similar incident happened with Florida Judge Matt McMillan, who is now with Florida JAIL, and a recap is written up on this story at Judge McMillan's website, apparently, which I haven't got the address of. But if you wanted to follow that through, you could search for his name, which is Matt McMillan. So there we are, just an interesting little snippet there. But isn't it sad that someone who is trying to get people in the law profession to abide by is himself sought out, and evidently they're trying to find some means to remove him because he's a pain in their side. On December the 17th, an article came out by Dr. Chris Martinson. It was headed, "The United States is Insolvent, the End of Money." And the article reads, and I will give you part of it only, that "Prepare to be shocked. The US is insolvent. There is simply no way for our national bills to be paid under current levels of taxation and promised benefits. Our federal deficits alone now total more than 400% of GDP. This is the conclusion of a recent Treasury cum OMB report entitled Financial Report of the United States Government that was quietly slipped out on Friday, that was December the 15th, deep in the holiday season with little fanfare. The writer says, sometimes I wonder why the Treasury Department doesn't just pay someone to come in at 4:30 a.m. Christmas morning to release the report. Additionally, I've yet to read a single account of this report in any of the major news media outlets, but that is another matter." And I'll conclude it with this person's comment saying, "But hey, I understand the report this bad requires all the muffling it can get." So that's something, isn't it? It possibly ties in with earlier articles indicating that the dollar may have to be revalued. But in the long term, all these problems are highlighting, I suppose, the fact that the way our governments operate, because of the dark influences, we are just headed for disaster. And it's heartening, I think, to know that in the not-too-distant future, when the Galactic Federation are able to get their program started, we will overcome all of those problems. Now, the article I mentioned before about Paulson and Cheney being subpoenaed by the tribunal has come up again. It would be expected, I would think, that such a sensational story really wouldn't run out of steam. But on Saturday the 30th of December, this was reported, and it refers to Henry M. Paulson appearing late at the National Cathedral service for the late President Ford. And apparently he took a seat behind Nancy Reagan and next to the Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice. And US and British sources inform us that Paulson was exfiltrated from Europe on a British plane. And they say, "We are expecting to receive spectacular reconfirmation of the arrest and indictment of the US Secretary of Treasury shortly. In the meantime, those Americans who, you see for years by their intelligence community, cannot accept that we publish only what has been carefully verified and who believe that we are another intelligence information site will have to back off and face up to the realities of the situation. If correctly handled, the developments are going to be hugely beneficial for the United States and the rest of the world. If malevolently handled, there will be a hyperinflation in the United States, soup kitchens, and a global depression." And they say, stay tuned. And unfortunately, I regret to say I can't actually tell you the site that came off. This is the downside of getting information passed on to, I think, mainly through emails. You don't always have the full information. Now, in Great Britain, on a parallel, but only a small parallel to 9/11 in the States, we had what has become known as 7/7, which was an alleged terrorist attack on the 7th of July. It's also known as the London bombing. Now, not very much has come up to indicate that it was a put-up job. We don't have the same degree of investigative probing and poking into the circumstances, but a little something occurred here that I thought might be interesting for any of you who are familiar with what happened, because There was a person on the on a bus that blew up. The other attacks were in the ground stations. And he claims that the bus was diverted from its normal route by two unmarked cars, which then left the scene at high speed after the drivers had conversed with police in the area. And this witness, who's called Daniel, has a website, and he states, "I was aboard the lower deck of the bus that was blown up on July the 7th. I rang the emergency hotline to report the two dark cars I saw holding the bus up and diverting it towards Tavistock Square. Instead of being asked to provide a statement, what followed was 7 months of police surveillance and harassment. My experiences are contained in a book called Statement, The Fourth Bomb, as yet unpublished. Now, apparently this bus was diverted from its usual route on that morning, reportedly because of road closures in the King's Cross area, which was due to the earlier tube bombing. And apparently the people writing this article, and we have the name of Steve Watson from the very good website Infowars.net, and I think he's referring to himself here, visited the site of the bus bombing at Tavistock Place and verified that normally this particular bus does not usually travel down that road. And apparently the footage on this can be seen in Alex Jones' latest film, Terror Storm. And Daniel, the witness, goes on to say that standing by the doors, I see a blue BMW 5 Series and a black Mercedes squeal to a halt in front of the bus, holding its progress along Euston Road. 4 minutes passed, then a police motorcyclist arrived at the blockage. BMW driver said something to the cyclist, who soon sped off. And 90 seconds later, the BMW suddenly drives off. Mercedes waits till the bus diverts east, and it also then speeds away. And after very slow progress, the driver suddenly opens the bus's central exit doors while keeping the front door shut. And this was apparently some 80 metres away from the only bus stop in the square where it ended up. And many passengers got off at this point because of the delay and, of course, the fact that it was heading in the wrong direction, not being on its normal route. Now, the question Daniel asks is, were these cars unmarked police vehicles? If so, what were they doing diverting traffic? He believes that would have been the job of the traffic police. Of his own experience being aboard the bus when the bomb went off, he said a deep boom resounded, shattered glass flew everywhere, was followed by an eerie silence. I scrambled up off the bus floor and leapt out, going along the pavement at full pelt. But over the following days and weeks, the relief I felt turned to exasperation at the increasingly menacing tactics the operatives trailing and observing me employed, confirming my worst suspicions. For some reason, I was embroiled in the largest criminal investigation in UK history. He claims, after having seen the video footage of the aftermath, that a man dressed in all black was filming him with a handheld camera. And he still has the shirt, he said, that he wore that day, and he says the police have never requested it for forensic investigation, despite having questioned him. I will conclude that by saying he also states that there never was an Asian-looking male on the lower deck after he left the bus at Euston Terminal. Now, he's mentioned that because 7-7 was tied into a group of young Muslims, I think it was, and of course, one was alleged to have been on that bus. But reports attributed to 61-year-old Richard Jones claimed there was, so there's a bit of a disagreement there. Anyway, investigators conveniently relocated the sighting of the Asian to the upper deck when they released their official report. So, we have some funny things happening there, and Daniel goes on to say that he began receiving strange phone calls, which became a bit sinister and so forth. And it was apparently 6 months and 3 weeks after 7-7 before he was asked to attend a police station in North London to provide a statement. They go on to talk about the presence of the unmarked cars and claims that they stopped the bus cannot be verified because the vehicle's CCTV cameras were conveniently not working that day. And drivers in the depot think the so-called bombers had inside help, that is the depot where the buses came from, because it was so organised. Some even think it had help from the company. So there's a lot of questions being asked there, but how far they'll get with that, I'm not too sure. I think the people in Great Britain are not maybe quite so inquisitive about these things and tend to accept what they're told in the press. Now, there is a website called thinkprogress.org, and there was a report apparently regarding something on NBC's Today Show. ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson said, and he quotes, he understands consumers' frustration with high gas prices, and the news that Lee Raymond, Exxon's former CEO, received a $400 million compensation package, but he noted that Raymond's high retirement passage wasn't Exxon's fault. It was determined by an independent group. Now, I find that absolutely staggering, but it was passed off, if you will, by saying that it was carried out by an independent group. But the person writing this has made an actual extract in the form of a transcript as to what Tillerson said. And he said, I do understand it has created a real distraction. I think in the high price environment, to dealing with the fundamental issues of why we have high prices, that compensation is determined by a committee of independent directors of the corporation who are responsible to the shareholders, and the management has no input to these packages. Well, the writer of the article comes back to say that Exxon's compensation board isn't as independent as Tillerson suggested, and that in 1999, Raymond was on the board of Chase Manhattan. When CEO Walter Shipley retired, Raymond and the other board members awarded him a multi-million dollar compensation package, and Shipley now sits on Exxon's board and helped award Raymond his generous retirement package. So as he said, not quite so independent as they made out. Money included, that just shows you what goes on, doesn't it? The rich get richer and the poor get poorer, without a shadow of a doubt. An Associated Press writer, Ian James, on December the 25th, brought out an article about Caracas in Venezuela, and he says that beneath bridges and overpasses, the homeless of Caracas are spending Christmas in encampments of cardboard and discarded wooden pallets. And President Hugo Chavez has pledged to do away with homelessness in Venezuela through an aggressive outreach program that is offering street people communal housing, drug treatment, and a modest stipend. But while the government says it has helped thousands, others remain on the streets, presenting a formidable challenge to the newly elected Chavez as he aims to make good on a promise to fix an entrenched complex problem. That's it. I admire Hugo Chavez. The press tries to give him a bad time in the West, but maybe that's because he is a genuine man here, and of course he has turned down help from the US, I think basically because he's actually said that he doesn't trust them. So there we are. Interesting. Alternative news came out through, I think, someone called Featherstone at thenation.com. And this, again, was about Venezuela and oil-keeping lower-income Americans warm. Right, sounds a bit strange, that, doesn't it? But the explanation is that Citizens Energy, headed by Bobby Kennedy's son, Joe Kennedy, along with the government of Venezuela and Citgo, who are a petroleum company in which that country owns a controlling share, provides heating oil to poor and working class Americans, would you believe, at a 40% discount. This winter, Citizens Energy and Citgo expect to deliver more than 100 million gallons of oil to more than 400,000 households in 16 states, more than doubling the scope of last year's Petro Philanthropy. Beneficiaries also include 163 American Indian tribes, most of them in Alaska, and the program has come under fire from the American right for its association with Venezuelan leader Hugo Chavez, whom the Bush administration has painted as a dictator and even a terrorist threat. Recent TV ads promoting it, in which Citizens Energy praises our friends in Venezuela, have particularly infuriated the likes of Fox's Sean Hannity and inflamed conservative talk show hosts who are calling for a boycott of Citgo. According to Citgo President Felix Rodriguez, the boycott and conservative attacks have had no effect on the company's revenue so far. But Citizens Energy spokesman Brian O'Connor says his organization has asked every major oil company and every OPEC nation to provide such assistance to poor Americans. And hear this, Citgo and Venezuela have been the only ones to agree. So no wonder they don't like Hugo Chavez. I mean, can you imagine that? No wonder the media in the US doesn't want you to know that a small, relatively poor country like Venezuela is actually helping the poor in America. They don't want you to know that. Now I have an article here questioning whether the euro will collapse. And it's tying it in with this continuing saga regarding the $1 trillion that are to be paid back to Ambassador Leo Wonta. Hopefully it will carry on until something specific comes out. It says that the historically unprecedented scandal surrounding the diversion of the long-since formally agreed settlement of $4.5 trillion payable to the corporate securities account with Morgan Stanley of Virginia-based Ameritrust Group, Inc., belonging to internationally renowned ambassador Leo Emil Wonta, has brought the financial economy, that's the world financial economy, to the brink of catastrophe, as a small cabal of criminal internationalist operatives seek to implode the entire derivatives sector after having enriched themselves by exploiting the diverted $4.5 trillion, which should have been credited to the account last June in accordance with a formal agreement signed by the President of the United States and other high office holders in May 2006. Now, this is the point of it. Here's the update. December the 20th, it becomes known that the French authorities began the distribution of French franc banknotes to the banks on Friday the 15th of December, and that the German authorities are distributing Deutschmark banknotes to their banks. And at an IMF annual meeting in 1998, Dr. Hans Tietmeyer, who was then president of the Bundesbank, was asked whether the Bundesbank had taken steps to store Deutschmark banknotes for use in case the EU collective currency turned out to be a failure, and he did not deny this was the case and turned to the next question, and that related to the distribution of French franc and Deutschmark banknotes, which was in consequence of the letter from Michael Cottrell to Paulson. Right, now here's, as I mentioned earlier, the US Treasury Secretary accused of breaches of the 1933 and 1934 U.S. securities legislation, of violations of legislation against organized crime and of RICO violations, and of the grim evolution of the Wonta crisis generally, and the prospect of a day of reckoning for the dollar-denominated sector. First, it confirms that France and Germany have never had confidence in the EU collective currency. Secondly, that the national banknotes back in circulation, it will not be possible to rescue the euro, since the man and woman in the street, being not stupid, will realise at once that their own governments have lost confidence in the collective currency. And thirdly, it will not be possible to put the clock back. The reappearance of the domestic banknote specie is a clear signal that the days of the collective currency are numbered. I must say, I think that's an article in isolation. I haven't seen anywhere any particular reference to that possibility, and I wonder if it's really a lot of conjecture. It's interesting that Paulson's name crops up again there. My next item, and I'm getting near the end of the news items now, is one that refers to Olmert's connection to 9/11. I say that in each programme, 9/11 never goes away. And this is one penned by Christopher Bolin, who's one of the few independent journalists and researchers who uncovers new information and adds to the evidence of false flag terror, instead of just continuously rehashing news and other people's work. Now, the article wishes to bring to attention his two newest works. Building on his research of evidence of Israeli involvement in the 9/11 attacks. Yes, I agree. I have heard many times that the Mossad were involved. Now, this one talks of the Israeli Prime Minister's connection. And he says, I'm not reading the whole article, but some crucial bits, that United Flight 175 and American Flight 11, which allegedly struck the Twin Towers, both originated from Boston's Logan Airport, while United Flight 93, which purportedly crashed in Pennsylvania, departed from the Newark Airport. Atzmon, a convicted Israeli criminal, is the CEO who also controls and operates the German port of Rostock on the Baltic Sea. The bus that blew up in Tavistock Square exploded outside the London of the ICTS. Some 9/11 victims' families brought lawsuits against Huntley USA, claiming the security firm had been grossly negligent on 9/11. While these relatives have the right to know what the Israeli security company did or did not do to protect their loved ones on 9/11, Huntley, along with two other foreign security companies, was granted congressional protection in 2002 and will not be called on to account for its actions in any US court. Well, if they're involved somehow in the whole setup of 9/11, maybe you're thinking like me, that's not so surprising. The article reads on that Atzmon, a convicted criminal, political ally and a co-defendant of Israel's Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, was directly responsible for passenger and airline security at Boston Logan Airport, whence the two airliners which struck the World Trade Center originated. His airport security firm is a prime suspect in the false flag terror attacks of 9/11. Olmert's relationship with Atzmon and his responsibility for Boston's airport security on 9/11 is a conspicuous tip almost completely ignored by the controlled press of the Israeli and Zionist criminal network involved in the terror attacks that started the so-called war on terror. Finally, these airport security firms are protected from examination when they allowed alleged terrorist hijackers to pass through them. Why? Shouldn't they be investigated to see how and what went wrong? Also, they never produced any CCTV evidence, that is video evidence, showing any of the hijackers getting on the plane. Why are they being protected? Shouldn't they at least have been approached to see where they went wrong to improve security? This is only one item connecting Zionist elites to 9/11. It may be a coincidence, but given all the other connections, there's a strong case to follow on these leads and see just how much deeper these connections go. There we are, all a bit fishy, isn't it? But a little bit more about 9/11 that will put the perpetrators, I think, in a very hot spot. Now, I got an email here talking about a march on the Pentagon that's going to come on Saturday 19th. This was reported by Ramsey Clark. Again, I don't unfortunately know what website or what paper or whatever he is related to. Anyway, Ramsey Clark will be leading a mass demonstration for the Pentagon on Saturday, March the 17th, which is the fourth anniversary of the start of the Iraq War. It is to become a turning point in registering mass opposition because it is also the 40th anniversary of mass opposition to the Vietnam War. Now, this demonstration would assemble at 12 noon at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. And what they're asking, obviously, is for people to join them and bring your impeachment signs. And they're saying that George Bush's policies are basically the same as those of the dominant economic powers that have guided US policy since at least World War II. George W. Bush as an individual may be more arrogant, lack caution, be less competent, and more deceitful than his predecessors, but in the main all have pursued the same policies, if with greater caution or restraint. And Ramsey Clark says, we must impeach George Bush to inform future presidents of the price they too will pay for provoking war. Impeachment. Presidents-to-be will continue the same policies of militarism and exploitation and war that George W. Bush has celebrated so destructively. Unless the American people say no more. We must promise future officials that they will be impeached as required by the Constitution and the conscience of its people. If they violate their oath of office to preserve and protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. So that's it. There's an article here by Dave Lindorf speculating on whether Bush and Cheney are planning an early attack on Iran. That's just come up many times. They did think at one time that it would have happened towards the end of last year. So I want to read part of this report, which goes back to October the 9th, when Dave Lindorf wrote in The Nation that it looked like the Bush-Cheney gang, worried about the November election, was gearing up for an unprovoked attack on Iran's nuclear facilities. And of course it mentioned the fact that the aircraft carriers had been moved into the area. Now, so he's updating on that, saying it now appears that the idea of attacking Iran is moving again. And the Eisenhower Strike Force, armed with some 800 Tomahawk cruise missiles, as well as a fleet of strike aircraft, and already on station in the Arabian Sea for over a month and a half, has moved into the Persian Gulf. And there is a second carrier group led by the USS Dennis, Gulf, and already in position are three expeditionary strike groups and an amphibious warship, all suitable for landing Marines on Iranian beaches. Dave Lindorf goes on to say, the idea of hitting Iran may make sense from the Bush-Cheney bunker, where the only consideration is not what's good for the country, but what's good for Bush and Cheney. After all, if you're losing your war in Iraq, and if you have hit bottom politically at home, and Bush's public support ratings are now down to 20%, which is where the Nixons were just before his resignation, and Cheney's numbers have been in the teens for months. And if the public is clamouring for an end to it all, and maybe for your heads too, expanding the conflict and putting the nation on a full war footing can look like an attractive, even if desperate, gambit. Dave Lindorf calls that the crime of the century. I suppose it would be if it went ahead after everything else has happened. Now, my final item of news here is regarding what they call the Brave Americans. And it relates, apparently, to the Jeff Renz show when, on January 5th, I'm saying when it was telling you that on January 5th there would be an eye-opening interview with Bill Gresham. So some of you may be looking forward to hearing that later in your day if you're in the States. Already here in the UK, it's quite late in the evening. And this email says, we will be working with Mr. Grisham on the design and deployment of one of the most advanced satellite systems ever put into orbit. We were asked to provide a UAV system in 2003, and Bush and Rumsfeld killed it because it would see too much and be in control of the private sector that was not part of Bush Co. and their IRARC agenda. Saying Saddam Hussein has been hanged for war crimes. You can bet the Bush family is celebrating today because what Saddam could have told on them has now been silenced. More on that matter, and it will not be silenced. The truth cannot be silenced. Now, they say that many people do not understand why there is a Second Amendment. The founding fathers knew all too well that an armed population is a deterrent to an abusive government. And as to highlight the point, they mention that when Hitler wanted to invade America as retribution for America entering the war in North Africa, Field Marshal Jodl and Rommel convinced him otherwise by merely pointing out that there were 38 million armed Americans, not in uniform. And the writer says Bush could learn the same lesson, for there are more armed Iraqis than there are soldiers in the US Army. There are just a little point there that's come up. A mixture of news, some good, some disturbing. But I think you have to be aware of what the, if you like, the other side of doing. I suppose just as a footnote to that little bit I've read, there was a very good quotation which came from Thomas Jefferson. And maybe I will put that one in as well, because he said, experience hath shown that even under the best forms of government, those entrusted with power have in time and by slow operations perverted it to tyranny. And I think some of this news, I'm getting to the bottom of it now, has evidently come from consortiumnews.com. Yes, it appears so. Now, they do conclude the whole article, I notice, by saying that what is needed are 435 moderate conservative independents for the US House that do not have an ounce of fascism, communism or religious territory in them. That would be 34 for the US Senate that will be up for election in 2008 and the candidate team of President and Vice President. And they say that two out of every three voters that are conservative matters, as does the 71 million eligible voter couch potatoes that need to quit grousing and get into the battle before there's no United States of America. So there you are, sort of a bit of a reminder and trying to call people up to take a bit of action. Now I just move on to my little slot that I call my UFO and ET bit. And the current sort of red hot, I think, story that's going around about UFO sightings is one that occurred on January the 2nd this year, of course, in Chicago, Illinois. And reporter John Hilkovich at the Chicago Tribune reported yesterday, that was New Year's Day, a flying saucer-like object hovered low over O'Hare International Airport, apparently above United Airlines Concourse Gate C-17, for several minutes before bolting through thick clouds with such intense energy that it left an eerie hole in our overcast skies, says some of the United Airlines employees who observed the phenomenon. The date was nearly 2 months ago, on November the 7th, 2006. The time was about 4:30 p.m. local time before sunset, and a dozen witnesses working for United Airlines, ranging from a manager to pilots to mechanics, all said the aerial object was dark grey metallic in colour, clearly disc-shaped, made no sound, had no glowing light, and remained motionless above gate C-17 for several minutes. Some witnesses said it looked like the disc was spinning. One United mechanic said, I know what I saw, and what a lot of other people saw stood out very clearly, and it was definitely not an Earth aircraft. Nothing sort of special about that one, I suppose, except that many people have had a good look at it, and where you've got numbers of people, I feel as they can hardly make any mistake. Now, a report here comes from Paris Reuters, December the 29th. It says that the French Space Agency is to publish its archive of UFO sightings and other phenomena online, but will keep the names of those who reported them off the site to protect them from pestering by space fanatics. The French agency, under Jacques Arnold, an official at the National Space Studies Centre, said the French database of around 1,600 incidents would go live in late January or mid-February. He said the CNES has been collecting statements and documents for almost 30 years to archive and study them. And he said, quote, often they are made to the gendarmerie, which provides an official witness statement. And some come from airline pilots. The report goes on to say that given the success of films about visitations from outer space like E.T., Close Encounters of the Third Kind and Independence Day, the CNES is likely to prove a hit. It consists of around 6,000 reports, many relating to the same incident, filed by the public and airline professionals. And it finally says that advances in technology over the past three decades had prompted the decision to put the archive online, adding that it would be available via the CNES website, which I will give you because sometime over the next month or two, it is evidently going to be opened up, which is www.cnes.fr. So that will be worth keeping an eye on, I feel. Now, I'm coming near the close of the program, but a few more minutes left. And the last time I was on, I did mention parts of a compilation of reports relating to UFO sightings, which came from a website called earthfiles.com, which is a wonderful one run by Linda Walton Howe. I think I mentioned before that you can subscribe to it, and she will send you these regular newsletters, and she does collect some fine information. I have a feeling there's a small fee to be on that list, but I'm unfortunately enough to have a friend who is a subscriber, so I see many of the reports that are passed on to me. This particular one I have talks about a US border patrol who found that there was UFO interference with Atlas missiles. And he said, talking of Linda Morton Howe, "I was just listening to your fascinating report on UFOs. I want to tell you about something I heard about many years ago, around 1964. I was stationed with the US Border Patrol at Carlsbad, New Mexico, during that time, and had a good friend who worked for the old AEC. And one night we were playing cards and drinking some beers, and he had been up to the Las Vegas underground atomic sites and was in Carlsbad for some R&R. Now, he swore us all to secrecy and told us about an underground air base near Roswell. He said it was located in the desert, on what the writer said he believed was BLM land, probably 40 or 50 miles northeast of Roswell. And he said the government had discovered huge limestone caverns, many times bigger than the Carlsbad caverns, and had developed it into some kind of underground air base and installation. And he said it had a big retracting door that planes could fly into, and the writer says here, I suspect he meant helicopters, as it would have had to have been a huge opening for a jet plane to land in. He said that the doors were often then retracted and the whole site was invisible, as the doors were covered with sand and looked like the rest of the landscape. And he said there were other weird things happening during those times, UFOs, strange events at a couple of the Atlas missile silos around Roswell, and one event that he witnessed when an Atlas missile had supposedly been accidentally fired while the silo doors were closed, and the missile reportedly blew partway through the doors and then exploded. The bad part is that it reportedly had a nuclear warhead on it, and that the warhead had been blown away somewhere by the highway. Apparently, patrol cars went out looking for it. I think they eventually traced it through someone who had found it, and I believe it actually walked off with it. That's amazing, isn't it? He said he later heard that some of those silo incidents were actually instigated by UFOs in the area, although he didn't hear that from the AF. And he said, I think the story of an accidental firing was made up to cover the UFOs being involved. But there you are. There's a little bit more to that story, but that's all that I will read, because that's the relevant part. I can only thank you for being with me. Do hope you had a great Christmas break, or whatever festive occasion you celebrate. And I'm sure we can all look forward to a fantastic New Year. So I'll leave you now. Thank you for being with me. May God bless you all. Thank you.